Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Daniel Liguori, along with Karen Nowicki. And this afternoon, we have the special privilege of having Arizona Diamondbacks broadcaster Mike Farron. Mike, welcome on.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Mike Farron, one of the voices of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Mike, we really do appreciate that. What got you into broadcasting? You're a very big part of the Arizona voice of the Diamondbacks. What got you into that?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't a very good baseball player in high school, and I always wanted to be around sports.
Sure.
And I come from a family that actually has a number of performers in it. So my mom is a musician and singer. He used to sing with Lyric Opera Choir in Chicago and with Chicago Symphony Choir. And my middle brother is actually a child actor in Chicago and did some film. And so I kind of realized early on that if I wanted to be around sports, since I wasn't the most athletic, I probably was going to have to find another avenue. And that was one of the reasons why I got into broadcasting. And I think I've made a decent enough choice so far, I think.
That is wonderful. You are you do the pre- and post-game show for the D-backs and also work along with Greg Schulte and Tom Candiotti for Diamondbacks games. Tell me a little bit what that's like. You know, you're now second – did 2 years with the D-backs. How has that been for you?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's been really rewarding. I mean, Greg is obviously an icon in the Valley. I mean, he's been for nearly 40 years. He's been part of the radio scene here and been the voice of the Diamondbacks since the beginning. And, you know, he and I have similar backgrounds, and we both came from small radio stations along the Mississippi River. Like, that's where we got our start. And so we've really connected in that regard. And he's been tremendous to me, just in terms of not just being a resource, but making sure that my wife and I have been comfortable here in the Valley, and you know, really opening up his life to us. And Tom is great. I mean, Tom is I think one of the best baseball analysts on the radio across the country, because not only is he really good at breaking down the X's and O's inside the game, but he's got a sense of humor, and he understands that as much as radio and specifically play-by-play is supposed to be driven on the content of the game, it's also entertainment. And he's an entertaining guy. And so to be able to have that and to have somebody who is a very, very good player in his day and be able to analyze a game like that and also, you know, be able to have a little bit of fun makes it a blast.
Absolutely. Now, 162 games is a long year. How do you prepare for that? I mean, being pre- and post-game, and then, you know, when Greg Schulte maybe doesn't go on the road trips, how do you prepare for that? Sometimes if you're with Luis Gonzalez or you're with Tom Candiotti, how do you prepare for those kind of things?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a couple different things. I mean, one, you have to be kind of mentally and physically prepared for 162 games. I mean, you're working 160 days out of 180.
Right.
And so there aren't very many breaks in there. And I think the biggest thing is that you need to make sure that you're on top of your work. And I was fortunate before I got here, and I still work with them. I've worked with SiriusXM's Major League Baseball channel for the last now dozen years. So you have a little bit different background when you've only been focusing on one sport for a long time. There's a lot of the time that has already been spent in terms of preparation. And then on a daily basis, it's, you know, trying to follow what's the biggest story. It's a little different for pre and post versus when you're calling a game. So it's what's the biggest story today? What's going to be compelling to our listeners? What do they need to know to get ready for the game? After the game, it's what happened in the game that you need to react to, especially when we have the other broadcasters in our home games for Diamond Talk, making sure that you're hitting the key moments and the things that really matter to fans, both good and bad. You have to hit that. And then for play-by-play preparation, it's making sure that you have all of the information you need to tell people what they need to know about the players, and in some cases, you know, what's going on in their lives too, while also not bogging it down with so much information that all you hear is a stream of numbers between pitches. Yeah. And so that's, I think a lot of it is just trying to find the right balance in, you know, how you use information, how much information you have and how you use it.
So when going through like the play by play, is there, you know, have you had times where there was a play that you had to sometimes you came out with more interjection from, because it was a Diamondbacks, I mean, just being a Diamondbacks versus the other team. Have you ever had that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I don't like to think of myself as a homer, but I clearly, it should be clear whose side I'm on.
Yes.
You know, and I think that that's part of, like, there are different things. Like, I do national broadcasts, too.
Sure.
And I try very hard. People know who I work for. I mean, I joke on a radio show that the Diamondbacks are America's team, right? So, like, I like to have fun with that to try and show where I am. But I try and... You try not to be as, I would say, enthralled by what's happening on a daily basis. You try to be balanced, because sure. You don't want to be biased. You want to try and give everybody a fair shake. But in the emotion of a game, if there's a big moment, if A.J. Pollock hits a big home run in extra innings, you're going to get excited about it, because that's an exciting moment because you know, you're a Diamondbacks broadcaster. You want that team to win,
too. Yeah. I know, probably Karen can speak to this. The month of September, when the Diamondbacks were going through their struggle, was a very frustrating month for me.
It was.
So how did you deal with that? I mean, I know September, we were all looking for the Diamondbacks to get to the playoffs. Unfortunately, this year, it didn't make it. They didn't make it there. How mentally do you have to prepare for that, knowing that, you know, it was a rough stretch, and, you know, when the teams are winning, you know, it's easier.
We're all on board.
Right. When teams aren't, you know, it becomes harder. How did you were able to mentally deal with that?
Well, I think it's a great question, because it's a lot different when you don't have any control over what's going on, too, right? If you're one of the players, you're clearly frustrated by what's happening, but you're the one who's playing every day. As a broadcaster, you don't have that control over what's happening, and you have to kind of remember that. So there's a couple of things. One, you're right, it is mentally taxing, especially when you see the way they lost some of those games. Yes. They were really gut-wrenching comebacks from other teams, and they really hurt. So you have to try and take a deep breath and clear that, and know that on a given night, you're still trying to entertain the audience, right? So you have to take off the rooting interest hat and put on the entertainer hat. And when you do that, you have to try and ensure that your energy is up, that you're engaged with your audience, and that you're trying to make – you don't want to be Pollyanna about it, because, listen, when things are going bad, everybody's going to know it, right? Like, you can't hide this. Baseball, there's no secrets. We do it every day, so there's no secrets in it. And you can't hide that. But at the same time, you need to be able to have the energy, because people are taking times out of their lives. They're looking for a release from everything that's going on in their world. And so you want to make sure that they're entertained.
Yeah, and that's so important. You know, when it comes to, you know, interviewing the players, you know, after whether, you know, it's an exciting game or a hard loss, do you have certain kind of perspectives that you use, you know, like if you're interviewing Paul Goldschmidt or A.J. Pollock or Torrey Lovello, how do you deal with those kind of moments?
After the game is a little different than before the game. So before the game, baseball is unique in that the access we have is pretty ridiculous, because we're around players for several hours before the game. Because it's like a real job every day, there's not this sequestering that goes on where you might have in football, where guys are very quiet by themselves. There's no media access before the game, all of that. So it's a little different in that regard. And that's what the time when you spend, you know, probably building your relationships. You're asking more open-ended questions about what's either going on in an interview in their lives, or what their work outside of the game is, or some of the more X's and O's type questions. For a post-game interview, it's pretty simple. If you're doing one on the field, it's reacting to what happened in the game. Generally, if we're doing one on the field, it's because somebody did something pretty spectacular. So it's, what did you do? What happened there? How important was this? Those questions. And those are the fun ones, too, especially after a big win.
Yeah, it certainly is. So when you're looking at those moments, do you have, like, you know, certain kind of questions in your mind, say Paul Goldschmidt hits a walk-off home run, you have kind of in your mind, you know, what you want to say to him, or does it kind of come up when you get him on the field, you know, or how do you go about those kind of things?
Yeah, I try and organize my thoughts. I mean, so in a post-game interview, it's so short. You're talking about 90 seconds, really, is what you're doing for radio. The TV ones tend to go a little longer. And my philosophy is, nobody really wants to hear from me. They want to hear from the player, right?
Yes.
So get your question in, get out of there. But as you're leading up to it, there are a couple moments in the game that you know you want to hit on, so you're prepared for that. So, in your example, if Paul Goldschmidt hits a walk-off home run, first question is probably something like, what were you looking for in that at bat? And then when he responds to that, you either follow up if there's something that he brought up that you find interesting, or you may switch to, how important was it for, you know, player X to get on base ahead of you? Or was it, you know, how, what can you say about the great defensive play Nick Ahmed made or something like that? Or how much is this a relief for you because you guys have been struggling? Something like that. You just have that idea when you go into it.
So you're always mentally prepared. You have something that's in your mind. And I guess with what you do, every day is a different day. So I guess it makes it, you know, so one day someone could be the hero, the next day you just never know. When it comes to like the, you know, the visiting team, is it, you keep it the same way when it's the visiting team?
Yeah. I mean, I don't tend to do much on the field after the game with the visiting team, but at home. Yeah. And when I've done, you know, national stuff after the game too, it's very similar. I mean, you're focused on the game. You know, if you're doing a pregame interview here for Diamondbacks radio, it's mostly because that player has some sort of connection either to the Valley or to the Diamondbacks organization in the past. And so it's kind of more like catching up with them to see how they're doing. And so, yeah, it's very similar in that regard. That's another thing where you have to be pretty balanced. You have to know that you're rooting for your team to win, but you don't want to walk into the visitors' clubhouse wearing the Baxter costume.
Yeah, it's true. I know you worked with Luis Gonzalez this season. What's it like to work with him? I mean, you know, he being, you know, the game seven of the 2001 World Series hero and what he does for the Diamondbacks. What's it like to work with Luis?
Gonzo's great. I mean, he's ubiquitous in town, right? I think he probably could run for mayor of Phoenix or just about any of the municipalities and win in a landslide, right? But it's legitimate. I mean, I think that's the thing about Luis is that he's just a really warm person and a very generous person. And so I like being around him. He likes to joke around too. You know, he was a kind of a prankster when he played. So we like to be able to get into some of that. And it's, you know, it's just kind of fun. And it's also fun having that connection to the past. You know, I wasn't here in 2001. I wasn't here for kind of the salad days, so to speak, of the franchise. But being able to have somebody who was such a huge part of it is great to be able to draw back on so that you get some institutional knowledge from it too.
So I get, you know, his, you know, days of playing, does that help you? So like when you go to play-by-play and hearing Luis's, you know, analysis, does that help you, you know, what you're going to say next sometimes?
Yeah, it does. In fact, you know, I try to, whether it's him or Tom Candiotti or, you know, I've worked with Willie Bloomquist and J.J. Putz here and whoever it is, you know, they're the experts. And so if they bring something out that is interesting, you know, your job as a play-by-play announcer or as a radio show host or whatever is to try and follow up on what they're saying. Pay attention to what they've said. You've probably set them up in a manner because you saw something that you felt like would be a good fit for them to discuss. So why not try and flush out that conversation? So absolutely, you want to be, I mean, I think at times announcers as a group, we can get so caught up in what we want to say that we lose track of what the people around us are saying. And I think the really good announcers, I think, are really good at that give and take and making sure that they're, you know, you make your teammates better, right? Like that's the key. And so that to me is very important. I don't know if I do it well, but I try to.
Yeah, it certainly does. Is it different? Like, you know, especially when you travel through this country from Chase Field to, you know, some of these opposing parks, is it different, you know, when you broadcast in different ballparks? I know you've been to many stadiums this year. Is there a different like vibe or different, you know, feeling like if you were in a different town versus here at Chase?
Sure. Yeah. There's a different energy regardless of where you go. You know, broadcasting a game at the Oakland Coliseum is a lot different than doing a game at Wrigley Field. Facilities might be better at the Oakland Coliseum for a broadcaster than they are at Wrigley, but the energy at the ballpark is not the same there. So absolutely, every ballpark is different. Every city is different. Just being able to be in those parks and those stadiums is a lot of fun. I mean, that's part of the joy of this game is being able to get to see competition and all these different areas, see different teams.
What's it like, you know, for, you know, right now we're in the playoffs and we have a lot of games that are coming down, you know, elimination games, all that. What's it like, you know, when you announce one of those games, like a game 163, a wild card game? The D-backs were in the wild card game last year against the Rockies. What is it feeling like that, knowing that, you know, this is a one-game playoff? I mean, everything's on the line. How does it change then?
So I'll tell you a little story. So in 2015, I covered for Sirius both of the wild card games that year. Yeah. That was in Pittsburgh and in New York. there's an intensity, there's a crackling in the air, there's this anxiety that comes with that game that's not even like a Game 7 of the World Series. He actually had a conversation on our radio show with A.J. Hinch last week about it because he's been through both. And he said, Game 7 of the World Series, the season is going to end. It's the last possible day of the season. You've already accomplished something. You've gotten to the very end. And you're going to be incredibly disappointed if you lose, but there is more of an excitement and a joy about it. The wild card game, there is a level of anxiety that comes from knowing that your postseason could be over immediately.
Yeah.
And it was interesting being able to be in the ballpark to witness those with no skin in the game, right? So this is, you know, a full year before I took the job, or the season before I took the job with the Diamondbacks. 16 was my first year here. And so seeing that unfold and watching the way the players were reacting, watching the way executives were reacting, managers, fans, all of that. And in both those cases, the road teams won the game. So watching the fans react was incredible. So fast forward to 2017. That day was as nerve-wracking as any I've ever had as a fan, as somebody who cares about a team. Because you wake up in the morning and you know this could be over. And all you are is you have this excitement about, okay, well, great things can happen if you win, but there's also this knot in the pit of your stomach. What happens if things go wrong? And because it's one game, weird things seem to happen in one games, right? When a winner take all games.
Yes.
Archie Bradley tripling was definitely, it was cool, but it was definitely a weird thing, right?
Yeah.
So you're kind of consumed by that. And so there's this nervous energy. There's this anxiousness. You can't sit still. You feel the pressure and then the electricity when you get within about 45 minutes of game time. You know, right about the time that we go on the air for the pregame, there starts to be that buzz. The conversation's a little bit louder. The energy's in the ballpark. And you can feel that crackling throughout the stands. And you can't help but get swept up into it. And then the energy, the emotions, the highs and lows of a game like that, you know, it was incredible to me in that game is the Diamondbacks never trailed. They led, but it never felt like that because Colorado kept coming back and kept coming back and kept coming back until the end. I think it was after the I think Jake Lamb's fourth hit that finally kind of settled everything down.
Yeah.
And once you get past that, like until that moment, it is incredibly intense, incredibly anxious, and that's what's like. And I wasn't even calling the game, so that almost makes it worse because then you're not engaged pitch to pitch. You don't have something to focus on. Instead, you're just basically sitting there unable to even pace because there's not enough space and a nervous wreck.
So how long does it usually take you to get over, like, you know, like we talked about, like the one game playoff, but to kind of, you know, if the Diamondbacks are in it and it's not on the winning side of things, how long does it take you to get kind of, you know, out of your mind? I know some people it's a little bit longer.
Yeah.
For you personally, I mean, being with the organization, how long does it take to kind of move away from that?
So, I mean, like getting swept by Los Angeles last year was tough.
It was hard. I was in the ballpark working in the team shop. And remember the ride home that night was like, well, this is not fun when you lose to your rivals. It's not something you get over immediately. So what do you do to try to get over those things when you know it's, you know, the season's over and it's going to be a while before they take the field again?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple things that's fortunate. I had to go out and cover the American League Championship Series a couple days later as a result of that. So I had to flush it quickly because I had to get ready to prepare for Astros Yankees. At that point, I didn't know it was going to be Astros somebody. I didn't know who it was going to be, you know. It was either be Yankees or Cleveland. So I had to get ready to prepare for that. The other thing that really is kind of a saving grace is my wife could not care less about baseball at all. Yeah. And so she's obviously going to be sad for me and for the team when I come home. And this actually played out a lot in September because it was a very disappointing month this year. But having somebody that you're around who's not as invested into every pitch as you are certainly helps you to gain a little bit of perspective.
Yeah, I've learned that. And I've told Karen here in the studios many times that, you know, as a fan, you can't control what goes on, you know, the field. I mean, there's a lot of times, you know, through the month of September, I'm like, you know, it was hard, but, you know, kind of say it's part of sports. I mean, you know, it happens, and I guess you could take the good with the bad. Do you think, you know, coming into next year, the D-backs will kind of, it'll be behind them and this team can be successful again?
It's a really good question. I think from an emotional standpoint, I think they're going to be fine.
Yes.
The question is, what direction do they take? You know, both AJ Pollock and Patrick Corbin are free agents. They're two of 11 free agents on the roster. I would think that based on where their contract demands are going to be, it's probably unlikely that they end up coming back. So then you're going to have to fill those spots, and you have other ones to fill beyond that. And do you have enough resources available for you to try and be competitive in the National League next year? And that's, I know that's the big question that the front office is facing right now, and they don't have an answer to it. You can make a case, because it's also going to be the last year that they have Paul Goldschmidt under contract, that you might as well take one more run at it. David Peralta will be back. Nick Ahmed had a breakout year. Ketel Marte, I thought his last 4 months were brilliant. You know, I think there was, you should have a healthy Jake Lamb. You're going to get Taijuan Walker back at some point. Robbie Ray looked good at the end of the year. There's enough things to build into this. You go, yeah, with a couple of tweaks, you probably could remain competitive again. Sure. But does it make more sense to do that, or to take advantage of where you are and try and get to a spot where you feel like you're building the next good, long, competitive team, team that's competitive for a long stretch? Because I think for the most part, what we've seen in baseball is when you try to push that window open for one more year,
yes,
it ends up slamming shut on your fingers.
Yeah. So, when it comes to a fan, I mean, I guess, the front office will look at those things. Is it, do they still have it left, or do we need to rebuild? Do you, from a fan's perspective, would you say that, does the front office look at, they look at, financially, do they look at how the fans will react if it is a rebuilding, for the sure. Diamondbacks the next couple of years? And from your experience, I mean, how much does the front office look at that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge. I mean, I think it's important to owners. And that's why I don't think you would see them go down the road of, say, what Houston or the Cubs or the Phillies or any of these teams that recently, went through multiple hundred loss seasons to try and really tore things down to the studs to get back, like what Miami is doing now. That I don't think that does not seem to be in their MO, and in part because it's not in Ken Kendrick's MO as the managing general partner. He wants to compete. He wants to win. So I think it would be much more modest than that, but absolutely, attendance matters. They're very proud of the fact that in all 21 seasons now, they've drawn more than 2 million fans. And the idea of pulling back to where you're not viewed as competitive, probably has an impact on that. And that then impacts the bottom line, because it's the amount of tickets that you're selling. It's the amount of eyeballs on your television broadcasts. It's the amount of ears on your radio broadcasts. And then that impacts the rates for advertisers. So I do think that there's absolutely, that is something that goes into the equation. The flip side of it is, are the fans going to be there even more if you do build a team that's consistently winning? And so if you take that step back, is it a short-term hit for more gain, both in terms of success on the field and off it? That's the equation that you constantly have to balance.
Right. So if coming from this season, unfortunately it didn't end the way we all wanted. You think that's kind of like, once we get the spring training, the fans put that in the rearview mirror, we're starting a new season and going into next year, kind of tune those things off of what happened at the end of this 2018 campaign. I know it may still come up, but it's every year is a new year. And do you believe that, what the fan base will just kind of put that away and, 2019 is another year?
I mean, I can't speak for everybody in the fan base, but I would hope so. I mean, I've been through seasons that are rough like that before. And by the time you get to spring training, you're anxious for the new season.
Yes.
Because you want to see the team have a chance to win again. So I'm certainly hopeful that they're able to put that aside, to put that out of their mind as you get to 2019. But I think a lot of it will have to do with what they do this winter and how fans feel about whether or not they have a chance, or when they would have a chance to compete for a division championship again.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know you mentioned the ALCS, covering that. Will you be doing that this year?
No, I'm not. I'm actually taking the postseason off this year, so I'm actually working studio shows only for Sirius. So it was a long grind going right from the wild card game to the division series to getting home. And then I had a long LCS last year. And then I do about 2.5 weeks of broadcast for the fall league too for Sirius, which gets, actually the Arizona Fall League starts tomorrow here. So it was time to take a postseason off. Unfortunately, my bosses at Sirius were good with that. So I'll be working a lot of extra days. I'll just be doing it from the comfort of my home instead of getting on airplanes.
Absolutely. So moving forward with Sirius, what people will you have on coming up that we can, for listeners that they can hear you? So as far as, players, coaches, anyone that you've scheduled that, for our listening audience that they can look forward to hearing to here in the coming weeks with this postseason going?
Yeah, every Monday and Friday right now throughout the postseason, I'm former Sun Devil standout Trevor Williams is going to be on our program helping to break down the playoffs. Obviously, had a great season with the Pittsburgh Pirates this year. Former Friday starter at ASU. Very, very good friends with Corey Hahn, who's in the D-backs front office. And so Trevor's going to be on with us a couple times a week. And then we have a regular rotation of managers who help us. I believe on the program tomorrow, Bud Black will join us. There's a couple other, I'm trying to remember who else is going to be on throughout the playoffs in our group. But generally during the course of the regular season, we have about seven or eight managers a week that join us over the course of the season. So generally it's, you know, a lot of times it's players and managers and, you know, other analysts from around the country. We've had a couple of scouts and former front office executives have helped us break down the series from a scouting perspective. So it's a pretty hardcore baseball show with a few laughs.
Yeah, that sounds like it. Yeah. Now, when it comes to like, you know, the timing of, you know, getting managers on and, you know, scheduling these things, how long in advance do you need to do to get like Bud Black to the Rockies season has ended yesterday for something like that? I mean, is it a quick turnaround time or, you know, what is usually had to getting those things prepared, you know, since, you know, coaches, managers, players have a very busy schedule.
Yeah. How do you go about that? So a lot of the managers who are regulars are compensated by us. So right. they're locked in. And we've had a relationship with Buddy going back to his days in San Diego. He's been on our show for years and years and years. So we have producers that handle most of that and they will, you know, reach out and contact. And he's got a regular time slot that he does. So that's where kind of he will fit in. I mean, there are other guys that, you know, either managers or players or executives, you'll either need to go through an agent or through the front office, you go through the public relations staff for a team to try and book if they're not one of your regulars. And then that takes a little bit of finagling usually to be able to get people on the same page.
Yeah, but I'm sure it's enjoyable that, you know, you have different conversations every day. Mm-hmm. When you interview, you know, a manager, what is your perspective a little bit different than versus the player? You know, the player's out in the. How do you do it a little bit differently? Like when Bud Black, Rockies manager, Torrey Lovello, or AJ Hinch, how do you change it a little bit differently? Since from a manager's perspective versus the players who are actually out in the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of it is, you know, updating on injuries. A lot of it is, you know, what their general feeling on the way a player is playing, or whether, you know, whether they're playing well or whether they're struggling. You know, what they're seeing with a guy on that. And there may be, you know, maybe there's been a controversial decision or call that's gone against them recently that we'll discuss that. And then also like to try and get some bigger picture items too. You know, there's, you know, if there's something that's controversial that's going on with replay, there's been a lot of discussion about the rosters in September. Traditionally, Major League rosters can be expanded to 40 players in September. It's dragged down games, and yes, it's also affected competitive balance. And there's been a big push for a number of years for managers to try and get that number reduced. They take advantage of the fact that the rule is in existence, as they should, but they would like to be able to reduce it. So you may get their take on that. So I think those things tend to make up what we have in a managerial interview.
Right. Do you look at the external factors like, you know, teams, travel time, like, you know, if I know you'd be interviewing Bud Black here, I mean, and the Rockies season ended yesterday. Do you look at, you know, the amount of time that these teams spend traveling and then having to not know what their opponent is and how much of a toll that takes on a team when it comes to the playoffs? Do you look at those kind of things?
Sure, we would ask about that. Yeah, absolutely. A popular question. We talked to Scott Service frequently, the Mariners manager, and Seattle has the longest travel every year, I think, with the exception of one in the last 15. They've put the most miles on because they're the most remote outpost for Major League Baseball. And so we do talk a lot about how that impacts, you know, the mental fatigue that comes with working 160 out of 187 days is pretty incredible. And you think, oh, heck, it's just a game. But there's a fair amount of pressure on you playing these games. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, we're not playing for nickels and dimes here, right? So I do think that there is that's one of the things that we try to give an appreciation for is how mentally taxing being specifically a baseball player is and what some of the issues they face are over the course of a season.
Right. And so a lot of it is mental. I'm sure there's a lot of the mental having had to go in the grind every day. Mm-hmm. Would you say in your experience, has there been, you know, one team that you've seen through the years of covering and being a broadcaster that was like, well, that one team that you were like, you know, this team I don't see going to the World Series, they won it all, just and there was something mystique about them?
that maybe overachieved. Yeah.
Or just kind of a team that was like, no one thought about them. And then they got in there and just kind of ran the table. And,
San Francisco Giants in 2010.
Yeah.
I would say that that was when I was covering that league championship series. And that was, you know, the Phillies team had been to the two previous World Series. They won in 08, they lost in 09, and they had just added Roy Halladay. So they had Roy Halladay and Cole Hamels anchoring that rotation. This was before they re-signed Cliff Lee. But that particular year really felt like they were a heavy, heavy favorite. And the Giants team was kind of like, geez, how are these guys doing it? They don't have a whole lot of power. They got pretty good starting pitching, but, you know, they don't have these dynamic defenders that catch everything they got to. I think that's when Mike Kruko, who's the one of the announcers for the Giants, said that every game was like torture. That this was like that was the torture team, right? So, and that one, I was still very surprised that they made the postseason, let alone beating the Phillies in six games and then going on to win the World Series. And they beat Halladay in game one. Cody Ross, who ended up playing with the Diamondbacks, hit two home runs off Roy Halladay in game one of that series. And I'll never forget that, that was incredible. And I remember talking to Cody before the game about how he was going to approach against Halladay, and then right after it about what had happened. That's one team that stands out to me as I wasn't even quite sure how they were in the playoffs when they ended up going on to win the World Series.
Yeah.
And they went 3 out of 6.
That kind of started that whole run there. Yeah. Yeah. Is there a team this year you think that is kind of reminiscent of that 2010 Giants that's left of these teams right now?
No, I don't think that there's one that I think can make the improbable run.
Yeah.
You know, I think if Atlanta were to do it now, that would be pretty improbable, but I don't think that they have the horses pitching wise to be able to do that, to get past the Dodgers, let alone get past Milwaukee.
Right.
And the teams that are left in the American League are really, really good. I get the Cleveland's an underdog and down 2-0 as we talk now, but they're a really, really good team, and they were in the World Series 2 years ago, and the Yankees and Red Sox and Astros are all 100-plus win teams. So, and the Red Sox have, 3 consecutive division titles. The Yankees and Astros were both in the league championship series last year, and the Astros won the World Series, and this team won more games and outscored their opponents by a wider margin. So I don't know that there's necessarily an underdog this year. I think it'll be an underdog assigned to Milwaukee if they get to the World Series, because they are not seen as strong as any of those American League teams, but that's a really, really good team. Yeah. And I would not be surprised if they end up winning the pennant.
Right. So when it comes to, you know, national level, because now you have broadcasters who are doing, you know, these series, how do you determine, you know, basically between Fox, you know, TBS, who is going to, for our listening audience, who's going to broadcast those games? You have Joe Buck, who does a lot of the either the American League Championship or NLCS. How do they kind of go about that?
Well, each year, the two major entities that have paid for those rights, TBS and Fox, will alternate between what leagues they have. So this year, Fox Sports has the National League, TBS has the American League. And generally, they have a stable of broadcasters. So Joe Buck is the lead announcer for all major events for Fox. He doesn't do anything until the World Series now. So I take it back. He might do the league championship series. He doesn't do the division series, at least. So he'll get that assignment with their A analyst, which will be John Smoltz. And then they have a secondary set. So in this case, Joe Davis is usually their secondary guy, the Dodgers TV guy, but he's filling in on this division series. And I think they were using Kenny Albert and David Cohn, AJ Pierzynski. You know, so those are all guys that are on staff with Fox. And the same goes for Turner, for TBS. Ernie Johnson was supposed to call one of the series. He's been dealing with some health issues. So they brought in Don Orsillo, who's the Padres announcer, and Don's done a number of games for TBS over the years. Brian Anderson, who's the Brewers TV guy, is their lead announcer. So he will continue to do the league championship series. So it just kind of alternates years, and then it depends on who's in their stable of talent, who they have contracts with.
Right. And so, you know, every year is going to be different matchups and those things. Would you say from yourself as a broadcaster, you know, you mentioned Greg Schulte, Luis Gonzalez as an analyst. What makes every broadcaster different from yourself to, you know, to Greg Schulte, to the great Vin Scully? How is everybody a little bit different? I mean,
well, that's a great question, because I think it's important to be different than everybody else. It's, you know, this is going to sound like we're sitting at Mr. Rogers or something, but the only thing that you can bring to the table that nobody else can is you. And so being yourself is really, really important. And so the things that matter to me are going to be different than the things that matter to Greg. They're going to be different than the things that matter to Joe Davis. They're going to be different than the things that matter to Vin Scully or Bob Uecker or Pat Hughes or whoever. I think what you're trying to do is draw a connection in with your audience. So you want them to be able to know that you have just enough gravitas that what you're saying is important, and that you've deemed that it's important for them because you know that it's these are the things that are important to them, and you want them to connect with you as a person. And the only way to do that, I think, is to be authentic. And I do think that that's a crutch that a lot of young broadcasters fall into, is that they want to be somebody else. They want to try and you grew up in the Bay Area and you go, I grew up listening to John Miller. I want to be just like John Miller. And you end up doing broadcasts like John Miller instead of, whoever you are as a broadcaster. And I think I think it's important to really, really know who you are and to just be yourself. People are going to like you just because, the nature of it is that the vast majority of people like most other people. There aren't that many that kind of turn their nose up at everyone. And I think if that comes across in whatever you're doing, then you're going to make a connection with your audience.
So it's just being that authenticity. Yeah. And I'm sure the managers and players, they can see that clearly, right? And I'm sure they...
I think so for the most part. I think it's if you're not trying to... the other part is you want to be respectful to them and to their space too. Especially as a media member, you're walking into their workplace to cover them. And you are a conduit to the fans, and I think they largely understand that. But at the same time, you have to treat them with respect in order to gain respect.
How do you deal with difficult questions? With when it comes to, certain managers making certain moves, is that a little harder to ask those questions, the probing questions that are maybe that fans want to know, but it's a little harder for a manager to answer? Have you been able to do that? Far as perspective, how do you do that and doing it in a way where it's informative, but also respecting what the manager's decision was, whatever happened.
I think the number one thing is don't act like a jerk in that situation, right? Or don't assume that the person you're talking to has done something to wrong you. There's nothing personal about it. The other thing is to just ask an open question. And a simple open question is, you had a couple of relievers up, you didn't go to them in the sixth. Take us through that situation, or what happened there, or what did you see? And those are generally the questions that they're presented in a manner where it's clear that you're not taking a side, but you know that that's an area of importance. And I think that's the way to go about it, is to try and ask open-ended, neutral questions. And if they say something that piques your interest in the response, it's okay to follow up on it with another open-ended, neutral question, and you'll probably end up getting a pretty good response.
Would you say for broadcasters, watching games and sometimes you'll see a manager make some move and maybe you disagree. Is it hard sometimes to separate, if I were the manager, I would do it this way? Does that ever happen to broadcasters where you see a move being made, maybe you don't agree with it, but you have to kind of step that aside and continue to go with what the game is? How do you deal with that? If you see something that maybe, being on the fan side of things where you would say, I would do this, I'd pinch it, or I'd bring this guy in. How do you deal with that if it's maybe something that you don't maybe necessarily agree with, but how do you continue to remain?
I think it's okay to point out the options that are available to them.
Right.
So it's like they've decided to stay here. Let's just say that there's a left-handed hitter that's coming up. You've got a lefty ready in the bullpen. There's a right-handed pitcher on the mound. You want to stay with it. And in your mind, they should go to the lefty. You could say such and such is loose, but he's electing to stay with him here. You want to lay out the options and just kind of a straightforward manner as possible, even though you disagree with it. Your job is not your analyst has a little bit more space to be able to comment on the game. They have a little bit more credibility when it comes to that because they've generally played or managed or been a scout or an executive or any of that. And so your job is basically to just lay it out and say, okay, here are the options. These are the things that could have happened. And explain that more so than going, boy, I really would have done that. Because it's not about you, because you're not going to be a big league manager.
Right. So I guess that's just being part of professionals. And these are the options. Yeah. And this is what is out there. Now, being on a talk show host, is it a little bit different because you have a little bit more, leeway there where you can kind of go into more depth? Do you find yourself changing your perspective because, at that time it's maybe after the game or before a game? Are you casting more of your opinion?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I look at it as being a play-by-play announcer is a little bit like being a reporter. You're reporting on the actions that are happening on the field, whereas if you're a talk show host, you are giving your opinion on it. But I also think it's very important to be credible in the opinion you give. Just saying this jerk did this and this, that's not right as far as I'm concerned. What you want to do is, you know, say, here's why I think there would have been a better decision made, and give some pretty good backing information for why you think it would have been better. Don't make it personal. Don't be mean about it, but try and outline and have facts to back it up. And that's really, I mean, I think that should be the hallmark of good radio. It doesn't always happen that way in sports talk. There are a lot of people who are follow my mom's old adage that if you can't sing good, sing loud. And I think that the key is really to be able to, if you're going to present an opinion, present facts to back it and just let it lie. People can make their own decisions. I mean, they're not, you know, that's part of what you're doing as a talk show host is you don't need to, we're not whipping votes in a chamber of Congress. We're out there, we should be out there presenting opinions that are backed by information.
Right. So when you are a talk show host, you're looking at things, you mentioned you're bringing in facts. Do you kind of take a look at it in a perspective of what the facts are, how a listener would see that, the facts that you are presenting, if you were, you know, how your listening audience perceives it?
Yes. I mean, I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to use what information you have in the way that supports your point, but it absolutely has to resonate with your audience. And sometimes that can mean that you have to go into a little bit further description. Obviously, it's baseball. Baseball's a statistical game. There are a number of advanced metrics that work, but sometimes explaining, giving just a little extra explainer of why you think this is important because this statistic tells you this is important to help, I think, sell your point.
Absolutely. So with statistics, I mean, those are going to be the biggest facts out there. Do you ever, in certain situations, have you looked back and said, you know, from the facts that you presented, you know, that this was a fact that I really, it came from the gut, you know, kind of like your own instinct?
Yeah. Well, I mean, facts are facts. Yeah. So like, that's a little different than, I mean, there are gut instincts, that, you know, you would have that. And listen, you can't be afraid to admit that you're wrong, too.
Sure.
You'd be like, I saw this information. Clearly it was incorrect. You should be able to fess up when you've made a mistake. That's part of being accountable, I think.
Right. So at Sirius, what can listeners expect from you? I mean, obviously with baseball, we're in a prime spot right now for, you know, postseason. What can they expect as far as from, like, you know, some talk shows and your ideas for the show moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I'm real fortunate. We have I work with Jim Duquette, who's the former general manager of the Mets and the Orioles. And Jim and I have worked together for a number of years, and he's a lot of fun. We have a really good production team. Actually, one of our producers is getting married this weekend, so he's going to be off for a little while. But you know, I think we try to combine analysis from either the statistical or the scouting standpoint. I'm a big fan of scouting and player development, and Jim's been a scout and run player development departments. So we take some of the soft science into it. We try and combine it with the numbers. We try and give you analysis of what happens either in a game or, you know, our real, I think where we do our best work is in the offseason when teams are team building, you know, looking to see what are good fits and why something may or may not work, where contracts go. But at the same time, we like to have a lot of fun. And so that's a big part of it. Cause again, it goes back to it's entertainment. So we like to goof around. You're going to be, you know, hopefully if you're listening, you're going to be laughing a lot, and then you might, you know, get some information that you're going to be able to use to be a friend in the fantasy
league. Right. So your schedule, we got a lot of baseball games, you know, some, you know, with the Braves and the Dodgers, the Indians and the Astros, Yankees, Red Sox. Is your schedule pretty busy this week, you know, with those games in play?
Yeah. I mean, it's my schedule's pretty set. So I'm on 7 a.m. Arizona time every morning. Well, it'll be 8 a.m. Right. soon. So
once the clock switch,
but yeah. So my schedule doesn't really change. I'll pick up a couple extra weekend shifts just to help out during the playoffs. Sure. But that's generally when I am. And it's busy year round. We do this year round. So it's even in the off season, you know, once the playoffs are done, then we're really focused on team building and whatnot.
How much time do you put into it, to watching, you know, these playoff games? I mean, like today we started
more than my wife watches.
This is pretty much all day. I mean, like I am, you know, watching the whole day.
Yeah. So I was watching, you know, before I came down, I was watching Indians Astros.
Sure.
I was in the car listening to it on the way here. I've been jonesing to check my phone to get the score. You know, so like I'm totally in, you know, every moment that I can be. I'm watching and paying attention.
Do you like to take notes from the game so that when you go in the next day, you have some of those things that really stood out in those games?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's part of preparation.
Sure.
So especially, so like Saturday night, I actually worked post-game after Yankees Red Sox. And my preparation for post-game show is a little different for that than it would be for our general talk show. Our general talk show, we're hitting on more big ideas. It's more interview driven. We're doing a lot of, we have some bits and content that, go with it too. So we're going to hit on some bigger picture things. But after that game, for that game, I was charting pitches and I was charting, you know, what pitch selections were, where pitch locations were, so that we would have those notes to be able to go back through. And I was working with Kevin Kennedy, who's one of the Dodgers broadcasters, sure, who Kevin is really good at doing that too. So we knew we were going to be able to have good conversation based on it. So yeah, there are some that I'm locked in pitch by pitch by pitch by pitch. If it's a day where I'm either not working or there's maybe it's not quite as important for me to be on every single pitch, then I probably will watch a little bit more passively, but I certainly will either be texting with the guys that I work with, or you know, I will be writing stuff down in terms of information that we want to make sure we hit the next day.
Right. So, I mean, you're always looking at that and preparing, you know, the most important things. As far as like, you know, opening the show, I mean, like today we have, you know, the Indians, the Astros, Braves and Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox. Do you, when you open up a show, do you look at the, what was the most, it's going to draw the listeners when you open up a show?
Yep. Yeah. I think you hit, we try to treat it a little bit. So we all come from a news background, except right, for Jim, because he was an executive in front offices. So we try and treat it like that. So you're going to treat it like, you know, like in TV news, they have an A block or B block, right? The most important stuff first, and then the secondary, and then the tertiary stories. And we try and treat our show like that too. So right, the most important story is going to lead in our right estimation. So this morning, it was the Brewers going to their third league championship right series in franchise history. That's what we deemed to be the most important. So we opened with that, spent time on that, spent time on some of the issues that Colorado has going forward and building out their offense. And then, you know, after our first update, then we got into the Braves and Dodgers, who are playing again today. That was a secondary story for us compared to what was right happening there.
Yeah, moving forward, the Yankees, Red Sox, you know, that's a, you know, with the huge mm-hmm rivalry those teams have. And then you have the Braves and Dodgers. Dodgers have an opportunity to clinch. But, you know, looking at those things, is that something that could be, you know, opening the Yankees, Red Sox because of the rivalry and what people want to hear?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously, it's a huge rivalry. I like to think that we try to balance pretty well, because I know that as many people as are tuned into Yankees, Red Sox, and they have two enormous fan bases, there are a lot of people who have Yankee Red Sox fatigue.
Yeah.
And they just don't want to hear about them again.
Yeah.
And so we do try to balance it. We try to make sure that we're talking about the other stories. It's beneficial being in the Mountain Time Zone that I can focus more on West Coast teams and yes, some of my East Coast counterparts. And so I want to ensure that we give equal shout outs to that and equal time spent on that beyond just the Dodgers, who seem to get some national attention because of their market size.
Absolutely. Now, covering these other teams, is it, I mean, outside of the Diamondbacks, do you have to kind of go in a different mindset where being with the D-backs, 162 games, now these teams are in the playoffs? Is it a different mindset, you know, when it comes to that?
Not really. The tenets of it are pretty similar. I mean, you're going to be a little bit more, you know, I think we talked about this earlier, like there's less of the I don't care as much about who wins
right
as I do with the Diamondbacks. And you're not around people every day, but it's still important to build relationships, and because you're trying to get information, because you want information that's good and credible. So I think a lot of the tenets are pretty much the same in terms of how you build your information base. It's just what changes is your rooting interest.
So basically, you know, everything changes. So I guess, you know, when you mentioned not caring as much about the teams that are in it now, does it take a little bit less pressure knowing that if there's a matchup, but you're not as effective, is it a different feeling, you know, going into that type of game versus, you know, if it's the D-backs?
Yeah, definitely. Like if the D-backs had been playing in the postseason, I would pressure be much more. I don't know if it's pressure. There would have been more anxiousness, nervousness, you know, all those things you feel before a game. Yeah. And I certainly would have cared more. You know, nice. I would have cared who won. These games, I don't really care who wins.
Just more wanting to see a good game and see exactly how things come out.
Great storylines.
Yeah. And you mentioned you know, about Sears. How can our listening audience hear you, if like a website so that, you know, or they can hear you starting, you know, this point forward?
Well, you can get an online subscription at SiriusXM.com, or if you've got a Sirius radio in your car, we're on Sirius 209 and XM Channel 89. I think we're part of the all-access package on Sirius, which allows you to get the online, which I really like because we can rewind and go back. There's an on-demand feature with it that's really nice. So that's the best place to be able to get us, and we're on – we are a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year baseball channel. Now, we're not live that whole time, but – for most of it, we are. We have live programming. We have features. I actually am fortunate to do a lot of the feature programming we have, too. So we're baseball junkies.
Do you have a podcast that people can listen to previous shows?
So there's an on-demand feature where you can go back a couple of days previous, but there's not a like a full podcast where you can go back.
But you can go back and listen to your other shows.
Yeah, you can go back and listen to this morning.
Right, absolutely. Who was your like as far as broadcasting, like an idol, that somebody that you grew up and really idolized as far as, you know, for as a broadcaster?
There were a couple people. I mean, I would say, you know, I grew up in Chicago, so I grew up at a time when Harry Carey and Vince Lloyd and Jack Brickhouse were doing Cubs games, and so I watched them a lot. They were some of my favorites. You know, I don't think anybody can copy Harry's style. But those were some of my favorite announcers. Tom Brenneman too was another who I really I had to spend some time with this summer, which was great for me growing up watching him. That was really neat. And then there were two other guys who were wholly instrumental, I think. One was Spike Odell, who did mornings for years at WGN. I worked at WGN for a while and got to know Spike. But as a kid, he always had such a lighthearted way about going about his day and his conversation. And he wanted to make everything fun. He wanted to laugh. He wanted to have a good time. And that always resonated with me. And then when I got into the business, Paul Hemmer was my first boss. And he did mornings in Dubuque, Iowa for 50 years. And Paul was frustrated with his lot in life after about 35 years at the same radio station, went and basically started his own station. They opened up a new radio transmitter. He bought it. He and his family started a radio station. I joined them about a year and a half into their existence. And Paul shaped the way I think about broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And there's no person that I owe more to in this industry than Paul Hemmer.
How can listeners, our listening audience, get a hold of you if they want to interact with you? Is there a best way they can through Twitter? If Facebook, do you use those things to interact with your audience?
Yeah, I'm big on Twitter. I use Twitter a lot. In fact, I'm probably on Twitter too much. But it's just @Mike_Farron is where you can find me. And I generally respond. As long as you're not being nasty to someone, I will respond to you on Twitter.
Right.
But that's what I use because I think it's the immediacy of it. It's like radio, right? It's immediacy. You're always going to get information right away. So I tend to be on there.
Absolutely, Mike. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on here today. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure, Daniel. Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me in.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X broadcasting live from within the Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right. We lean business. Until next time, I'm Daniel Liguori along with Karen Nowicki.